everybody. Welcome to the Hallmarkies podcast. We are so excited today to be talking about our second to last episode of When Hope Calls. We are talking this episode 9 of this first season. Now I'm Rachel and Cammie is here.
Hey, everybody. Happy almost Halloween.
Yeah. Yes. So we are almost done When Hope Calls season 1. Are you really looking forward to this finale coming up?
Yeesh. I don't even have the words to quite say it.
Yeah.
I mean, the big thing that I saw from the preview is Grace is going to England? What?
Right.
I thought that grandfather was coming over to our side of the pond, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and we're not talking about an overnight plane trip.
Yeah.
We're talking about months by ship and train and
we need the Hallmark movie about that. I mean,
you could very well have a Hallmark movie about the journey. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it would be good. Could have a whole spinoff season.
A spinoff of a spinoff. Oh my gosh.
When you know what would be great is if they got in my dream fantasy fanfic that I should write,
it would be
Grace goes and gets Rosemary to go with her to England. Because you know that Rosemary would be all about the trip.
Oh, she'd go in a heartbeat.
Oh, yes, of course.
Go in a heartbeat. Yeah.
That would be the best thing ever to exist.
Oh my gosh, that would be so funny.
Someone should write that fanfic. I'll read it.
You know what? I'll take a crack at it.
Yes. All right.
I'll see if Sarah wants to join me and we'll take a crack at it.
Yes, I will totally read it. I promise. So this week's episode, what did you think of it overall? What are your thoughts?
Overall, I thought it was really sweet. It wasn't necessarily a nuts and bolts episode, but it was definitely a building episode.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's building toward the end. And there were some really great moments. For instance, Maggie's housewarming party.
Yeah.
That was the sweetest thing ever. And you might disagree with me a little bit on this, but I thought that this was the first episode where Joe's attraction to Maggie was obvious.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that up until now, they've been kind of playing it that it could go either way. They could just be friends and they could be romantic, but I thought that it could be a perfectly platonic relationship where they were just friends and they were just existing in the same town. But this episode, I went, they're turning things around a bit, because when Eleanor tells Joe that Maggie's moving, he panics.
Right.
He looks totally panicked. And then when she tells Eleanor that she's staying for as long as they'll have her, and Eleanor says, well, that would be forever, and gives her a big hug, and Joe's looking all awkward, standing in the corner. I said, okay, they are rolling with it, definitely.
I mean,
now.
I saw that spark, that light earlier on in the season between Joe and Maggie, but yeah, it was definitely the most sort of obvious, the most forward of it all. And
yeah.
I think that Maggie has turned into a really reliable character for your B plot. You know what I mean? Like, she's never the focus of the episode, but she's always there to deliver your solid secondary part of the episode.
Well, and she's just such a great character.
Yeah.
You know,
I really enjoy her.
She adds so much flavor to Brookfield, something that Brookfield as a small town needs. And just having her there just spices things up so well.
Yeah, Yeah, it's true. It was really cute. All the stuff in this episode with Maggie and getting back to dear old Britain and all that stuff was so cute. I loved her little house. It's like, that is adorable. Just this, I loved, like, a one room little house.
I loved the shot where the camera is focused on the door and Maggie's walking back and forth. I thought that was the sweetest, cutest little shot of just her taking the chair from here to there and then walking back and putting the table here and, oh, there's a knock at the door, and open the door. It seemed very theater almost. It seemed very theater to me. That's something that I would do with blocking in a play. Yeah. And I thought it was great. I thought it was really cool.
Mm-hmm. It was really cool. And I guess as a confirmed Anglophile, anything that's sort of British and is just fun. I really enjoy it.
Yes, so. I love Britain.
It was so cute. And what did you think of the beginning of the episode? We get some major flirting going on.
Rachel, I wrote down in my notes, okay? I wrote that in my notes. This is the most flirting that we have ever seen between them. They were downright giddy almost. Yeah.
Like, I would say totally it's some of the giddy. Most flirting that we've seen on anything One Calls the Heart. Like, it was very, because it's always been sort of more of an understated show, except for Rosemary. But Lillian and Gabe flirting big time. Gabe said, sometimes the truth will come out. You just have to let it come out. So he's sitting there in his rocking chair or in his chair.
Like an old grandpa.
Yeah, he really was. It was so funny.
I do have to wonder, did RJ, and I missed the tweet fest because I was at an event, but I want to tweet RJ and say, did you hurt your ankle or something? Or you couldn't walk?
It almost had sort of a Clint Eastwood kind of vibe to it. I'm just sitting here in Gran Torino or something, like, get off my lawn, kind of a thing. Like, it was really funny. I liked it very much.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, because then also, it wasn't just them, because Grace and Chuck were very flirty too.
Yeah, but they've always been more flirty. They've been more flirty than Lillian and Gabe.
Yeah, it was so cute though, and she's all like, that she's all talking about Benson, and he's like, another man in your life.
He comes right out and says it. You got another man in your life, and I went, whoa. we've definitely crossed a barrier here, Houston.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, oh, are they exclusive, and I missed that? Like, he's a man in her life. That was really funny and really cute. I liked it. I could use more flirting in general in my Hallmark.
You gotta have the flirting. But what I loved was the banter between Lillian and Grace. Mountie's work is never finished. Barely a moment to relax.
Yeah.
And then just RJ's face when he says, well, it's an ongoing investigation, but I will say littering is a very serious offense. Just the way he kind of gives her that sidelong look. It was so adorable.
Yeah.
It was so adorable.
It was really good. And there wasn't as much with Sam this episode.
No, he still had his piece. Yeah, he still had his piece.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised if next week we get a full-on kiss from maybe both of these couples.
You think so?
At least one of them, I think we'll get from one of them at least. Yeah,
well, I mean, looking at the preview, Lucy, the new foreman at the Stewart Ranch, she comes out and tells Chuck that Grace is going to England.
Right.
And then,
yeah, it'll probably be her then.
And then she sends him to go and catch her. If you leave now, you might be able to catch her. And I just went, okay, well, number one, we know that Lucy is okay with this. And number two, it almost seems like she's rooting for it, yeah, which is something that dear old mom is not going to be very happy about. And then, I mean, I'll come right out and say this, because I got a little fooled in the preview for a couple episodes ago when Chuck says, Grace, I don't want you to go, you know, and it turned out to be a misunderstanding. And previews do that. You know, they make a big deal about something that's not a big deal to hook you. But I don't know, you know, Chuck is seen getting on his horse and riding off. And I just went, huh.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder. It's a little confusing, because in that case, in the previous one, she was actually considering moving. This would just be helping Helen. And so she's not moving to Britain. Like, he doesn't need to storm off and follow her. Like, she's just going for a visit, basically. So
I wonder if it's because things are not quite resolved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm wondering, because they were not resolved when the episode ended.
No.
He was actually really ticked off at her, and she wasn't happy either. And so I'm wondering if maybe throughout the episode things are still not going to get resolved, and then she's leaving for England, and he thinks, oh, I better get over there and get after her so that I can tell her I love her before she leaves for months and months. I don't know.
It'll be interesting. But let's talk about that for a second. So one of the plots is you have them, you start out with them flirting between Chuck and Grace, and then they go on this.
This was so cute. The passes muster.
Yeah. And then they go on this ride, this horse ride, and they end up at Farmer Ken's land, and Chuck sees that his horse has colic and knows the treatment that's best for the horse, but he climbs into the pen or whatever with the corral with the horse, and Farmer Ken gets very angry, very upset with him for trespassing, for you know, bothering his horse.
I wanted to know what the heck was his problem. What was Ken's problem?
I don't know. So there's sort of the two sides of this situation. So Grace is obviously very conflict resistant, like averse.
Yes.
Like any kind of, she just immediately just tightens up, and she's on the side of, you were wrong to go and trespass on the farmer's land, and it was going to result in some kind of altercation, and she cannot, you know, handle that. Whereas from Chuck's perspective, he's looking out for that animal, and he knows the best treatment for the animal, and he's doing a service.
He's doing his job and
a service to Ken, and Ken is the one in the wrong for not recognizing that. And so where do you come out on this situation? Are you more team Chuck or Team Grace?
Well, like I said, I want to know what Ken's problem was. I mean, he cannot still be mad at the Stewart family for the whole cattle thing, because it was discovered that Daniel was the one stealing the cattle. And I don't know, it just sounded to me that Ken had a stick up his rear. Yeah. And, you know, I just, so I'm more down with Team Ken, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
what was his problem? Seriously, somebody says, I've got a new and better treatment to get your animal better faster. Oh, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's got to be the rancher pride in there somewhere, but still, just what was it? He sounded angry that Chuck was even in there. The man's a vet. The man's a vet. He sees an animal in trouble. What?
Well, and that's so why
Grace, I'm more angry with Ken than anything. You
know? That's fair. But the Grace was upset because she felt like he was in the wrong for trespassing on his property. But I don't know. I feel like, I think it's because Ken was being so unreasonable that I'm more on Team Chuck than on Team Grace.
I am too.
Natural for a vet to want to look after, like, I think in the society that they were living in, I don't think what he did is unreasonable, and I think it's his response, Ken's response, that was unreasonable. And
I agree. Walk into his house or anything.
Yeah, and I feel like I feel like a little bit it shows Grace's insecurities as far as definitely with handling any kind of conflict. And we've seen that coming through the whole season, where just anything that sort of comes back to her history, or anything that feels kind of tense or any kind of conflict, she really struggles with it. Like, she's not somebody that I would say is very emotionally resilient or strong in that way. Like, she's strong in other ways, and she's so sweet and so kind, and that's really great. But I think that I think as somebody who has undergone trauma, which she has in her life, she's a bit fragile, I think, on some things. And
I would definitely agree.
Yeah. And I think you can see that here, that I don't think what he did was unreasonable. And I think, I don't know. I was kind of like, I don't understand why she's carrying this on to multiple days or multiple hours. You know, it just seems like something that wasn't a big deal. And I was kind of like, why is she continuing to kind of think about this? But in her mind, he was being rude, I guess. I don't know what it was. Interesting.
He was being inappropriate. He had crossed a line.
Yeah.
He had that. And in her mind, he had crossed a line. And it was interesting because, you know, they arrive back at the orphanage and he offers to put up Benson, and she says, no, I can do it. And so Chuck knows that she's not over it yet. And you can see that right as he was leaving, he almost turned back. You could almost see his arm turning the reins, but he stopped just short and he kept going. And he just, I don't know. They do it for the sake of drama, but if this were a real life situation, he should have stayed.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting situation, but we'll see how it kind of plays out. I don't know. There's a side of me that's like, just let it go. It's not a big deal. Like, it's over. It's not even your property. It's not a family member of yours. It's not like it was, I don't know. It's an interesting thing, but anyway.
Well, and then it escalates. Do you want to go there now, or do you want to save that for later?
Yeah. So she at the housewarming party,
at the memorial party,
she gets really mad at him and bringing up again and wants him to apologize. And it's like, this isn't even your, like, I feel like saying to Grace, why are you adopting problems? Why are you taking on someone else's problems? This doesn't have anything really to do with you.
Well, and it started out as her taking Lillian's advice of explaining that that was something that bothered her. So she started out with great intentions. She started out by trying to not just be the stoic, stereotypical female that hides her feelings and then expects the man to read her mind, you know? It started out really great, but then she called him arrogant, which is not a very good thing to do when you're trying to patch things up.
And she said that she was trying to keep the peace. I don't really see that. And also, she's the wrong human being to be keeping peace. Like, she's just too emotional, I think, as a person. I think Lillian would be better at that, or someone like Maggie, that's just a little bit more sort of forthright and
let it roll off the duck's back.
Not so emotional. And I don't know, it was just a weird, I didn't really agree with Grace on this.
And she said she was trying to keep the peace, but all she was doing was telling Chuck he was wrong.
Yeah, why should he apologize to Grace for wanting to help the horse?
This is about a sick horse. Can we please move on?
It was weird. It was very weird. But anyway, so yeah, there were two other major plot points going on in the episode. But one of them was, you have this journalist coming into town that's going to be doing a piece on the life and death of Matthew Stewart. So this is Tessa's husband.
So fun fact, the photographer, the guy who plays the photographer, he had a small role on a show that was my favorite back in the day. It was a show called Sue Thomas FBI, and it was loosely based on the true story of a deaf FBI consultant who could read lips. And so whenever they were doing surveillance, they could send in agents without a wire, and she could read what was happening. So it made, and apparently she was a very remarkable woman. And so they did this whole TV series that lasted 3 seasons. And he just had a small part in one episode where he played a plumber. And actually, if you own the app Hallmark Movies Now, which if you're listening to this podcast, you most likely do. Go on Hallmark Movies Now. It's under TV series and miniseries. Sue Thomas FBI, as in your eyeball. Sue Thomas FBI. It is the most adorable show ever. And yeah, it's fantastic. Cute.
That sounds great. Just the way that Chuck is looking after the best help of the horse, we also need to be looking out for companies that are trying to do good and not just look out for the mighty dollar. And so that's why I'm really excited to talk about our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. This week, we are very lucky to be working with the company Thrive Cosmetics, and that's cosmetics with a CAUSE, cosmetics. And right now you can get 15% off your first order with code Hallmarkies at thrivecosmetics.com/Hallmarkies. That's thrivecausemetics.com/Hallmarkies. And it's really cool. They are a company that really thrives on not only producing a good product, which is very light to the skin, like it feels like you're hardly wearing makeup at all. It's paraben free and sulfate free, and it just doesn't even feel like you really have that kind of cakey feel that makeup can do. It feels light, it feels fresh. And I've been really impressed with a Brilliant Eye Brightener that, because I have so many sleep issues, this is, it makes my face feel more bright and more. It lives up to the name, and I've really enjoyed using it. It's a really good product. Plus, they give back to causes that help women. With each purchase, they will give to help women emerge from homelessness, survive domestic abuse, and to fight cancer. It's also vegan and cruelty-free. They are certified by Leaping Bunny and by PETA, and so it's a product that you can use with full confidence. And you can have it auto-replenished, so you could just get it whenever you need it on a regular basis, or you can just purchase just one particular product. So it's a really great company. I've been very impressed. And so check it out. It's the thrivecosmetics.com/hallmarkies. That's thrivecosmetics.com/hallmarkies. Enter code Hallmarkies, 15% off your first purchase. So Lillian is obviously very concerned about this this article that's going to be coming out.
Now that's something actually that you should worry over.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of, oh, my man in my life is trying to help a horse. Like, is weird. But anyway, yeah. So Lillian is concerned about this because she doesn't want to see her father basically raked over the coals again and his memory sort of besmirched again. And
by association, her.
Yes. And so Tess says to the reporter, says that he was cut down by recklessness.
And, oh man.
And so this is Tess's perspective, because I think this is the only story that she's ever been told about.
Or that she picked up. I don't know if she was ever told anything. She just was told that the bridge collapsed, and she immediately started blaming Lillian's father.
Because Lillian has this report that was done about the accident, and I'm not sure how widely available that report was. The journalist seems to have read it or be aware of it at least at one point, because she tries to give it to him and he's like, I already know all of that. And so basically what happened in reality with this situation is Matthew tried to put too many cows on the bridge, and over it was too much. And that's why it ended up collapsing, not because of any problem with the actual bridge. And but the way that it was reported was that it was a problem with the bridge, even though the report said that it wasn't the fault of the bridge.
It was shoddy workmanship is what was widely known.
That's what people thought, but that wasn't actually
reality. That's what I'm saying. It was widely spread, I should say. Yeah. It was widely spread that it was shoddy workmanship.
Yeah.
And so, I've got the quote that Hank said to Lillian about Matthew Stewart. He knew there was a risk, and he wanted to be the one to take it. That's why he was the last man on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And just so he knew. He knew that it could very well collapse with all those cows on there, and he did it anyway, and so it's his own dang fault that he died. That sounds terrible.
It's true. And Lillian says to the reporter that it doesn't matter what I believe, it's what Tess believes that matters. And so, yeah, Tess is just 100% convinced that it was the fault of this bridge. And so Lillian is trying to build up the case about her father, and she talks to this guy Hank, as you said, and
yes.
And she basically, he's the only living witness, I guess, of the what went down, and she talks
living
to him,
or around
present, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the only one who's living or around.
Right. And so she talks to him and trying to get him to tell the reporter what actually happened. But he's obviously hesitant to do so because he works for Tess. So he doesn't want to lose his job, but also doesn't want to upset Tess and sort of mar the name of Matthew. And so it's got kind of two legacies here, and plus his personal employment that would be a problem.
Well, and it's really interesting because Hank says that he was 17 at the time, which can be a bit traumatic for a teenager to witness that kind of tragedy. And then it says, he says, none of us wanted to speak ill of the deceased, especially with his widow sitting right there. Well, yeah. That's all well and good, but you're going to mar somebody else's name? You know, right. I mean, they say, well, we didn't want to speak ill of the dead when his widow was sitting right there. Oh, so you're going to destroy the reputation of this other man who is still alive and has a family to support. Oh, that's great.
You know, well, and
that logic made no sense to me.
Well, also too, you're talking about a very powerful man and a powerful
that too, yeah.
Yes, and so that's also coming into play where I don't know if we really know what Lillian's dad's position in the town really was. Whether he
not yet.
No. Yeah. We don't know kind of how powerful they were. And so, yeah, it's an interesting situation. So Hank is trying to decide what he wants to do. And the reporter says, my job is to tell a good story. If you can find something new, I'll consider it. And so we got some fake news going on here.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's not true. But turn it's a heck of a story.
Turn of the century. Fake news.
Going on here.
Yeah. Got to get the story.
Got to get the story.
And so then you also have Gabe in this episode that, like we talked about, he's sitting and watching. So he basically knows that something's going down. He's seeing it all. And so he sees Tess going to the bank, and then the banker actually comes out and tells him that she and the other, I don't think
he saw her go into the bank. It was just that the banker comes and says that I've got the paperwork for a big deal between Tess and Tom Clay.
Yeah, the Tom Clay. And so he's just kind of watching and seeing what is going down, what is happening. And
was an awesome shot when Tess and Ronnie get on their horses and are riding out of town, and the camera just pans as Gabriel is watching. And I thought they would break away with the post right there because it would ruin the shot, but they didn't. Mm-hmm. And they kept going even with the post there, and then came out on the other side with him still watching them. It was such a cool shot. Yeah. I loved that camera angle. It was great.
Yeah, it was cool. And so Tess has sold her land. Is it all her land?
No, it's just part portion. Of it.
Yeah. Sold some of her land to Tom Clay for cash. And
she won't tell him why. She won't tell him the quote unquote opportunity that she's had. She prefers to keep it private, she says.
So, yeah. And so then we see later on in the episode, we see Gabe and Nathan from When Calls the Heart.
Nathan's back. Yeah.
I feel like there must have been a cut scene there somewhere because he was just kind of there. It was sort of random. Oh.
No. I thought the exact same thing. And see, this is why I watched the episode twice before we do this, because I miss so much. There is that one scene when the telegraph operator, I cannot remember her name. Was it Kim? The woman.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember her name now. Darn it. But she brings him a telegram. She brings Gabe a telegram, and it's from Nate. They don't say it's from Nate, but the language tells you that just the vernacular that mm-hmm. it is from Nate because it says he's coming and all of that. So yeah, first time I watched it, I was like, wait, whoa, huh? What? Nathan's here out of completely nowhere. But then I went back and watched it again. I'm like, oh, there he is. There's the telegram saying that he's coming.
I still think there was a scene cut of them interact, you know, of them that's meeting possible, up. But yeah, that's fair. And anyway, so yeah, it was a pretty small usage of of Nathan in the episode. But so they are watching everything go down, and basically you have Tess meeting with Sinclair, because earlier you see Sinclair's goon shows up and says there's going to be a meeting. And so you have Tess and Ronnie meeting with Sinclair. And
Ronnie's really turning out to be a wuss, isn't he?
Yeah, he really is. And he says that a wise man knows when to cash out.
That's what Tess says. Ronnie doesn't even say that much.
Yeah. And Tess uses basically the sale of the land to pay off Sinclair. And, you know, she says, I want to be done with all of this. And he says that may not be possible. It may not happen. You're involved. And so we'll see what's going to happen with that coming up, I'm sure, in this finale.
I'm thinking that the issue with the land is resolved because, you know, Mike Sinclair went into all of that. Do you want me to sign something? And she says, oh, I don't think either of us needs that, probably because she doesn't want to leave a paper trail. But then he says that he's going to go after Gabe somehow. And that's when she says, oh, we don't want to be involved with that. It's too late. So I'm wondering what Mike Sinclair has in mind for Gabe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So yes, then the last plot of the episode, like we mentioned, is about Maggie getting her little house, and she's feeling a little homesick, and evidently her family in England isn't really even there anymore. Her mother and father are in Australia. And so she's kind of one of those people that doesn't really have a homestead to kind of even think about or go back to. I can relate to that because my family moved when I was 17 from Maryland to California.
Oh, wow.
So when I would go home for breaks during college, it wasn't home. It was just to my parents' house. This is not where I didn't have any friends there. I never lived there. It wasn't the same as a usual person going home or going back to their hometown for the holidays. So I could kind of relate to that feeling of, you know, cause people would ask, well, where are you from? And it was always a little bit of a hard question for me because I hadn't been to Maryland in a long time, and then my parents didn't even live there, and yet that was where I went to middle school and high school, so it felt like that was where I was from. But I don't know, I could kind of relate to that feeling of being like, I don't know where I'm from, if that makes sense. So and now I basically just say I'm from Utah because I've lived here basically my whole adult life has been in Utah, except for when I was on my mission. And so even that, though now my parents live in Utah, but for a long time, it was always sort of a complicated question. And so I can relate to Maggie there. And they have this little England housewarming party for her. And that was really cute. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, and the detail that they went into to make it so special for her. I mean, Lillian giving up her tea kettle, which was so beautiful.
Yeah.
And then, excuse me, and then Eleanor making those Chelsea buns and trying to get currants from the mercantile. and then getting her the wellies that she called them, the rubber boots. It just,
yeah.
I mean, that's not just a housewarming party. That was a huge, huge gesture.
Right.
And I think that it really made Maggie feel like she had found the place that she needs to be. You know, it made her feel like she was home. And because she hadn't had that for a long time between her travels and her parents moving and all of that, you know, she was feeling really displaced and misplaced. And so now there are people in this town who are showing her that she matters. And they are showing her that they want her there and they love her, some more than others maybe. And,
yeah.
And so she now knows that she's important to them and they cared enough to find out things that would mean a lot to her.
Yeah.
And then they did it. You know, it's just very sweet.
Yeah, it was very, very sweet. That's a good word for it. And and so Lillian is left trying to decide what to do because she can kind of tarnish the legacy of Matthew Stewart and to save her dad's legacy. But you know, she feels torn about that. What's the right
choice? What a dilemma.
Yeah.
What a dilemma to be in. You either save your father's name, who died basically because he was without loved ones and he had to keep traveling for work. She said that he died of a heart attack. So who knows if all that traveling was really hard on his heart. And so she could very easily blame Tess for her father's death. And so she could either reclaim her father's good name, or she can not spare the people that Matthew Stewart left behind.
Yeah.
That's a dilemma. That is a huge dilemma.
Yeah. And so, and Hank says, I will admit the truth. I will say it. And
that's another big thing. I mean, yeah. You're talking about his whole life. He said Matthew Stewart gave him his first job. It looks like he's never worked anywhere else.
Right.
So for Hank to say, this was wrong, they were wrong, and I'll say so too, I thought, ooh, wow, that's very big of him.
Yeah, agreed. And so Tess gives the speech about her husband. And then the reporter comes up and says, hey, you have new information. And Hank and Lillian decide not to change the story and let him post the story. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if the truth does end up coming out next week, or if this is the end of that part of the story, at least.
Or is it going to come out in season two somewhere?
Yeah, you don't know.
So, I thought it was very interesting that Hank said, I think your best story just walked out the door.
Right.
He's saying, you are missing something big time, mister, by not talking to her. I thought that was really big of Hank.
Yeah. He's calling out on the fake news. So there we go. That was the episode. I think it was actually a pretty good episode.
The more we talk about it, the more in-depth it seemed. You know?
Well, it was a good episode as far as character growth. I learned a lot about the characters, and I always appreciate it, especially in a show, when they have the trust to have flawed characters. Because
yes,
human beings are flawed. And so even though I thought Grace was being dumb, I'm glad that they allowed her to be dumb. I'm glad that they allowed her to be petty and to not, because that's what makes interesting human beings to talk about. No, it because paragons of virtue who always do the right thing are boring.
Yeah, and, it's true. Yeah. We want to all be those paragons, but we can't. We're not.
Right.
So, yeah, she can't be perfect in every way. She's already so adorable. She's got to have some flaws somewhere.
Exactly. So very good. Well, we'll look forward to next week. And so thanks so much for talking about this episode with me, Cammy. I really appreciate it. And
of course.
And where can people find you and your blog and your content?
So on Instagram and Twitter, I'm at Cami Drama Girl, and that's Cami spelled K-A-M-I. On Facebook, I have my Hooked Hardy Facebook page, which is Hardy with an I-E. And then I have my blog, which is hookedhardy.com.
Great. Make sure you guys are checking that out. It's really, really fun. And you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes and YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. So take a look at that. I'm doing Disney Scares Month this month. Ooh. I've done for 4 years. We talk about spooky movies from the House of Mouse. So it's really fun for family movie night. Check that out over there. And we are going to have an incredibly busy week on the podcast this week. We are doing our Hallmark preview on Wednesday. So definitely look forward to that. We're also going to have our recap of the Good Witch movie. So that's going to be happening. We have our fantasy draft that we do every year with the Bubbly Sesh. Where we talk about different tropes in Hallmark Christmas movies. That's going to post this week. We have our interview with Amy Winter from Up TV that's going to be this week. It is going to be pretty exciting. So you're definitely going to want to be tuned in to the podcast and check out all the fun stuff we have going on. And so thanks so much, and we will talk to you later.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.